Pope Leo XIV has called for AI, artificial intelligence, to be designed to achieve the common good and welfare of mankind. His Holiness has finally weighed in on the AI debate, but there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. He's comparing it to nuclear power, warning it could be used for domination, exclusion, even harm, if left unchecked. So, who is the Pope really calling out? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. In Magnificent Humanity, this new papal encyclical, Pope Leo XIV makes a very deliberate choice of language. He says AI must be disarmed, not destroyed, not rejected, but controlled. He draws a direct comparison to nuclear technology, something we understand is both hugely beneficial but desperately dangerous. And the concerns he raises are wide-ranging, from job displacement on a massive scale to the concentration of power in the hands of a small few, even to simply changing how we think, how we relate to each other. But is any of this new? Is it just more moral panic? From the printing press to the internet, there's been fear for all the unknown every time a new technology comes up like this. So is the Pope really saying anything we didn't know, or is he simply the biggest voice to raise serious concern? Well, joining us to discuss this, I'm joined by founder of Get Started with AI and host of Future Proof right here on News Talk, Jonathan McRae. But firstly, by Gina Menzies, theologian. Gina, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Ciara.
Now, for the benefit of News Talk Daily listeners, a commitment to your craft, I think, if ever there was commitment, you have read all 43,000 of Pope Leo XIV's words.
I have, Ciara. It's well worth reading, and it is a long read. However, it is very clearly written. It is divided up into five chapters. And I'd almost recommend anybody out there to start with chapter five, which is about war and AI. I mean, it is very profound. And I think what's interesting is it is the first encyclical of this Pope, Pope Leo XIV. And it is on the anniversary of the encyclical by Pope Leo XIII in the end of the 19th century, which was very aware of the signs of the times. And I think that's what makes this really, really important, that this isn't just yesterday that Pope Leo looked at this. He has been aware of the advance of AI for quite some time. And this was a very reflective document. And what's really interesting, if you look at the launch of the document, He launched it himself, which in itself is unusual. And there was a panel with him. And the panel was even more interesting. There was a man called Cristobal Ola, who was a co-founder of an AI company called Anthropic. And Anthropic are already in conflict with Trump because they would not allow their models to be used in terms of weaponization and in use for mass surveillance. So there's already a battle going on there. And this man, Christopher Olaf, he is a billionaire. He's Canadian, interestingly also. And he has said that we have to have an ethical approach to AI. And I think that's at the heart of what Pope Leo is saying, that he's not negating AI. He's not saying, like, nuclear power is not a bad thing. It's how it's used. And he's also saying AI can be used for humanity as well, but it's how we use it. And his biggest concern, really, I think, is about those who now control AI, those who own it, those who set the agenda. And his view is that they're setting the agenda without consideration of humanity, of the dignity of the human person. And he does go through a number of things. Going back to the first encyclical, Rerum Novarum, at the end of the 19th century, this is completely in line with all the other Catholic social teachings. But it actually, I think, goes further and is alerting us, making us aware of what a lot of people, I think, would run away from AI. Many of us don't totally understand it. But just anecdotally, last night when I was looking through channels, I came across a channel which showed an aeroplane being flown without a human. And that scared the daylights out of me.
That actually made me feel a bit nauseous, to be honest.
Exactly.
I'm nervous enough going
up there. That's exactly.
He does use the word disarm, doesn't he? And it's funny that you should pick out chapter five, because it's pretty strong language. What does that mean, and who is that a shot at, do you think?
Well, I think he's addressing not just us as individuals. I think he is addressing governments. I think he's addressing politics. And he said, we need to disarm AI. And it's a really strong word to use in terms of where it may go. It's a bit like, you know, nuclear power. is fine, but we also need to have it in an ethical framework. And I think that's what he's saying. We need to apply the best of humanity to devise an ethical framework. And he concedes it's extremely difficult, because how are we going to devise an ethical framework that is universal, that all countries buy into? And, you know, in the absence of that, people can go in many, many different directions, and most of them may not be for the good of humanity. He's really strong on a very common core of Catholic social teaching, that the common good, and it's a phrase that's almost slipped out of political discourse, that the common good is what we should all be aiming at, to become, you know, to make humanity better. And he's very clear that AI will not necessarily make humanity better, albeit it has great uses in terms of medicine and of education. But left alone, it is highly dangerous.
Yeah, because he talks about technological progress can't be considered, I suppose, successful if it increases inequality, if it weakens human dignity. You talk there about the parallels with the Rerum Novarium from Pope Leo XIII. And he spoke in that about the Industrial Revolution, didn't he? And
yes,
his warnings and concerns about that. How are the two revolutions, do you think, similar?
Well, I think this is a kind of a crossroads in terms of humanity. And Pope Leo XIII really was ahead of his times in that he recognised how new developments, and Rerum Novarum means new things, how new developments could impact particularly on the workforce, on labourers, and that needed to be taken account of. And he's very much in support of, you know, ordinary humanity. And in the same way, Leo XIV has the same concerns, but albeit in a much more conflictual environment. One of the interesting things, I think, is that in many paragraphs in the document, he refers to something, the signs of the times. And again, if we were better informed about the documents of Vatican II, the signs of the times was absolutely a headline in those documents, which means we need to be aware of the signs of the times. And there's another strong, it's kind of theological, but I think it's perfectly understandable, the notion of historical consciousness, that we all live in a different time and place. And what Pope Leo is saying is we need to apply the gospel. I mean, in many respects, there's a lot of the Bible that he refers to. We need to apply the sort of the core values of the gospel to wherever we are and whatever is the new development. And this development can be very scary if we don't sit up and pay attention to it.
And as you say, he seems to really see this as a historic turning point rather than just another invention. Have there been instances in the past, I wonder, Gina, where there's been church interventions on maybe issues like labour rights during the revolution or nuclear weapons that could apply today? And have there been instances where there were interventions that actually had impact?
Well, I mean, it's very hard to say, you know, what the impact might be. And somebody already asked me today, just in conversation, what will be the impact of this document?
Who's listening?
Well, exactly. However, I think Leo has established himself, you know, as a very consistent commentator on world affairs. And I think people listen to him. And like, this wasn't a document that was produced quickly. He's done the research. That's what I think is really interesting about it. He has actually gone out and looked at scientists, or at least has talked to scientists, has talked to engineers, has got a really firm hold on it. And, you know, this man was one of my top, like when I was going through the people who might be Pope, he was very near the top, because he's a mathematician. He speaks six languages. He's incredibly reflective. And I had a big X beside him as well, a question mark. He was an American, but it didn't go against him. So, you know, I think this man knows what he's talking about, and he does want to reach out to everybody. It's very non-prescriptive. He's raising the questions and said, we urgently need to deal with these questions. The church has intervened in the past. I mean, go back to Rerum Novarum, has always really spoken on the side of social justice. They talk about Catholic social teaching, which has really began at the end of the 19th century, the contemporary one, for over 135 years ago. And in all of those, social justice and the rights of humans has been preeminent among it. How many people have paid attention to it, I don't know. But there's almost a convergence between, you know, humanity being aware of where we may go and also of how it impacts on every single individual. I mean, in the document, you know, he talks about, you know, the concerns of parents, of AI, of all the things that children have access to and how we need to protect. In fact, the interesting thing is that the subtitle of the document is Magnificent Humanity, Safeguarding People. So, you know, very aware that we need guardrails. And if we don't sort of establish some kind of international, you know, guardrails, where will all this go? I mean, you have people now using AI sort of in terms of weaponization. And that's why the last chapter, I think, is a good one to begin with, because we're so aware of the situation of the world at the moment and of the wars that are breaking out everywhere. And he also is very interesting in that he talks about just war theory, which is a very old concept in Catholic teaching, but it is based on the cause has to be justified. You're defending the innocent. There has to be a reasonable, you have to have exhausted every other diplomatic route before you take up arms. Mm. And interesting enough, I think Vance tried to use this recently. And in fairness, Pope Leo cut him off and said, that's not what it's about. But they tried to use it to defend, you know, what they're doing in the world at the moment.
More than this, Pope Francis is getting deeper and deeper into conflict with Donald Trump and his people. Why do you think we are seeing this?
I think, again, because he's a very aware Pope. He has spent a lot of his life in Peru. He is deeply embedded in Augustinian theology. And I think when he sees something that needs to be called out, he's absolutely fearless. And that's what I would expect of a Pope, of a leader of a church. He has no fear. He will say it as it is, without contradiction. And what I think is fascinating is he has never named Trump. He's never named any administration. You know, he talks about the absolute urgent need for diplomacy all over the world, you know, in Ireland as much as anywhere else. And he talks about a very interesting phrase, I think, near the end, where he talks about how words are used. And I would like to think I'm a wordsmith in a way, because English was my first degree. But we have used words, and we are now using words in a very flippant way, I think. You know, these quick sort of snap cliches that everybody seems to be into now. And he's saying, you know, we need to be much more careful in how we use words and the need for honest dialogue. He talks a lot about truth. He also talks about the threat to democracy, which I think can be hugely undermined by how words are used. And you only have to look across the water in both directions, if you like, to see sort of how words are thrown around in a very careless way, which does impact on all of us.
Well, Gina Manzies, I appreciate you. I know you stayed up very, very late last night. In fact, potentially through the entire night to get through those 43,000 words. Thank you for all your work and your research and speaking to us today on News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Ciara. It was a pleasure.
Jonathan, can I ask you, what are your thoughts on what the Pope has been saying here?
So, I mean, everything the Pope says makes a huge amount of sense. I mean, he's calling for an ethical rethink of how we are developing this technology. And he calls out, like, you know, a lot of things in this. He mentioned AI about 66 times in this. Essentially what he's asking is for the leaders of AI to consider how they develop this technology. And he touches on a few things. One of the major issues is, of course, the use of AI in military. People may remember that horrific bombing of a school in Iran at the very beginning of the Iran conflict. You know, the backbone of that was Maven, which was developed by Palantir. And it helped, you know, it was designed to help military decisions on the field. But of course, it didn't have the correct data, and it assisted with targeting the school, which was incorrect and based on out-of-date maps. So, you know, this is an absolute tragedy. And, you know, allowing AI to help make decisions without fully understanding it is a real issue with which Pope Leo is really fighting against. He's saying that we need to be ethical in how we think about it. That AI, you know, is a mirror to humanity, and therefore, you know, we need to be developing moral AI, and that AI isn't a real person, but it seems like one. And so generally what he's saying all makes sense. There are a couple of issues that I have with it, and that is about, you know, what we can do about it, and writing AI off completely.
A lot of what he raises there that you've repeated has already been discussed and I think vented over the last number of years. What does his intervention add that wasn't already there?
Well, I suppose it's very unusual that a religious leader would come out and speak about this. He obviously has a very keen following. He's hoping to influence, you know, on a governmental level, decisions around what he sees to be an existential threat. I will say, while there's a lot of talk about the existential threat of AI, lots of people are not convinced by it, and feel that a lot of the hype has been kind of used to sort of justify the billions that are being spent in developing this technology to the benefit of those who are selling it to us. And so, you know, there's lots of people who don't think it's going to be this catastrophic, but it will have a major change. It'll have a change to jobs, it'll have a change to how we interact with technology, even relationships potentially. But it's not all bad.
He does also talk about AI affecting, though, how we think, how we form relationships. There is some truth to that, isn't there?
Well, yes. And of course, you know, obviously what we would love to have is a more socially connected society. If we look at technology and our use of it over, you know, the last number of decades, it's, you know, we've reduced social contact through using technology. You know, we think of Tinder or, you know, Airbnb, you know, where we're not really interacting with people anymore. We're just getting services. And that's led to, you know, a lot of social fraction, I think. But what he's saying is that, you know, it can't replace a person. It can't provide nurturing or care. While I'm not an evangelist for AI at all, I do think people are missing the potential for this AI to do good. So if we think about, you know, there's 3,000 people waiting for a bed in Ireland at the moment for or waiting for mental health treatment, right? Half of those have been waiting for a full year. Do we really feel that those people are better off getting no treatment at all versus having treatment that is provided by an AI that is well-trained and can give good guidance? I mean, I personally feel like there's huge potential for great strides to be made in mental health care. So I think there's lots of things that this will affect, but there's two sides to everything.
Well, one of his big fears, I think, seems to be the concentration of power here, that there's sort of a small number of actors set to make a huge amount of money, although we'll wait to see how that plays out, and that they ultimately control the sphere, and that makes him uncomfortable.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, they are a very unlikable bunch, the people at the top. When we think about, you know, how Elon Musk has behaved, the things that Sam Altman has said, you know, certainly Palantir, it's these are not lovable people, and they are absolutely at the driving seat of very, very dangerous technologies. The problem is, what would he do about it, Kira? Like, you cannot say now, stop developing this technology. Each of the leaders has said this. They said, we can't stop because other countries will just go ahead anyway. And this is true. Like, if you think about China or other countries, they're not going to stop developing AI if America decides it's going to hold it, because there's huge advantage, both strategic and governmental reasons why AI is, it could be very advantageous.
So what he's calling for then is this global regulation on AI. Yeah. Now that is surely at odds with those in power across the globe.
So it is a lovely idea, but if we think about how long it took us to get a universal design for a USB charger, and we think about where global socioeconomics is right now, like the idea that we would get everyone to sign up and adhere to a restraint on AI development is insane.
I know, particularly when you look at some of the great global groupings around the world, whether that's NATO or the UN, and you see how under threat that they are.
Absolutely. I mean, I just don't see global agreement at all, particularly when there's so much at stake. And, you know, we haven't talked even about Russia, but Russia, China, United States, India, they're all vying to be the next global AI superpower. And they believe that that will be of massive advantage. Whether or not the companies that they are hoping will succeed go bust in the meantime, because it's so inflated, this industry is yet to be found. But I do think the positives to healthcare, which are going to be immense, the positives to education, which I believe are going to be immense, these are often not talked about, that, you know, and the positives of, you know, creating economic good. The World Economic Forum said, yes, there will be a change to job, but AI will give a net positive to the job market. I think we don't talk about that side of it enough. We often talk about those who are displaced because their jobs will be obsolete. And there will be a bit of that, but I don't think it will be as much as people think. We do need to talk about it. We do need to understand it, though, Kieran. That's the real issue. Like, the EUAI Act is in place this year. Most people have done no training. They don't understand AI. They don't have AI literacy. And that's why we set up Get Started with AI, to help people understand what the limitations are, but also what you can do with this technology, which is getting better every day.
All right, Jonathan, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kira.
do email me your thoughts on anything we discuss here on News Talk Daily. I do love to hear from listeners. Newstalkdaily at newstalk.com, or follow me on Instagram. My handle is at official Kira D, and send me a message there. I'd be delighted to hear from you. Until tomorrow morning, take care. Bye-bye.